This is the Out of Time Film Podcast, where your hosts, Tom and John, discuss everything from blockbuster films to TV and games like there's no tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the Out of Time Film Podcast. I'm Tom.
I'm John.
And this week we are talking about all three seasons of Daredevil. I'm so excited.
It's been such a long time for me to process the show because I remember when Netflix was getting very popular, I saw Daredevil on the homepage and I was like, that looks interesting. I remember you were talking about it back then because you were watching Iron Fist, Jessica Jones, almost to the era of Defenders. So
yeah, I remember that.
I don't know why this show took me forever to get into. I never escaped the first half of season one. I never finished it until years and years later after all the MCU mess. I was like, oh, Daredevil. And you were like, John, this is peak. This is so peak right now. And I only had 1 week to watch three seasons of Daredevil, which I am almost not realizing.
I mean, that is a commitment. I respect it.
I don't recommend this. It is a lot, but it is peak. I had so much fun exploring this world in a much grounded reality of the MCU. This is kind of disconnected in ways because it does refer to the MCU sometimes.
In season one, there's quite a few references to The Incident, which is the events of the first Avengers movie. And I think they reference Thor and Hulk and stuff like that. So it's a part of the universe, but in a way that doesn't directly encounter a lot. I mean, basically until recently, it was unclear whether all of these Netflix shows were canon at all. I mean, Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio were in the MCU as late as 2021, but we didn't really know whether these shows were canon until Born Again was reworked. And we're 1 week out from Born Again, and you rewatch this show, and this is how you do a streaming series. If a studio doesn't want to commit to the full classic 22 episode season, then this is the way. 13 episodes, not 6 or 8, which is pretty much what we've been getting from Marvel since the Disney Plus series' start. But here you get 13 episodes to truly sink your teeth into a layered plot, interesting characters who are well defined and developed throughout. You got a good balance of action and drama, and every episode is pretty much over 45 minutes. I mean, that is amazing. And I'm worried about Born Again. I mean, 9 episodes is cool and all, but with how we've been going recently, I do worry about the episode lengths. I mean, no MCU show has had the gall to give us just a 50-minute episode where two people just talk about their ideologies on a rooftop for the entire time. Like season 2, episode 4 of Daredevil, where Matt and Frank just yell at each other about ethics and morality.
Yeah.
It's some of the best superhero stuff I've ever seen.
That episode is amazing. It's just great to explore heroes that have completely different ideologies and just talk it out. It's the quiet moments that I have so much to really get into the emotional core of Daredevil, to explore their characters and their stories and their perspective in the world of Hell's Kitchen. And the action is really, really good. But there was a lot of stuff that wasn't well shot in terms of cinematography. I mean, there was really good shots. It was a bit dark. It was a bit dark to see the fights and stuff. I had a hard time just looking to my screen. I was like, what's going on? I can't really see some of the shots.
Right, okay, interesting.
So I'm a bit conflicted about that. The lighting was very dark, and I wondered if it was the camera, because they've used the Red Dragon for this show, which is pretty good, but it was very low lighting, dark, and I just couldn't really see a lot of things.
I've never heard that criticism before. I mean, it's certainly not a problem that I've had, but I can understand it, because this show definitely is the gritty side. It's the darker side. It is the darkest thing we've ever seen from the MCU, but personally, I think this show is beautiful. I think that there is so much in the framing and in the colors a lot of the time. And yeah, it is a dark show and it doesn't rely so much on CGI, which a lot of Marvel projects do. And I just love the practicality of it, the grit of it. Everything feels so lived in and so real and so dirty, all in the best ways. And when it comes to the action, it's so brutal. It's so well choreographed. You can feel the intensity and power of every punch thrown. It's never over edited. It's pretty much always perfect. And everyone fights different. I mean, Daredevil is a brawler, but he has acrobatics and he feels nothing like Kingpin, whose fists are like hammers, or Punisher, who mows through a crowd shot by shot, or Bullseye, who takes the speed and agility of Daredevil to another level of intensity, or any of the Hand, who are just straight up ninjas. And it's all different matchups in the action, and I just think it's really cool.
It is really good with all the symbolism throughout the story. In terms of cinematography, it's just this hell that we're going through, but it has this sense of duality all the way through. Wilson and Matt, they really mirror each other's ideas, but in a very different way. They both want to save the city, but from Wilson Fisk's perspective, is like completely destroying it and then rebuilding it again in his own image. And then you've got Matt, who sees the city worth saving for. There's that darkness, there is that hope, there is something to keep going with it. And I really love that whole dynamic all the way throughout the show. It's just the power, and it's about fear as well, that the show is trying to emphasize the fear of losing your friends or losing power, losing everything. And then it's just him being the man without fear. He's trying to learn those fears and trying to overcome that as well, which I absolutely loved towards the end of season 3 when Matt realizes about his fears. And it's just the character arcs all the way through that just fits so perfectly.
Yeah, all the character stuff is so good. It doesn't feel like character serving narrative. It feels like narrative serving character. We are so lucky to get perfect castings throughout. Every single character is top notch and they have excellent chemistry. You immediately fall in love with Matt and Foggy and Karen, and then that makes all of their fights, all of their fallings out, and all of their reunions across all three seasons so much more heartbreaking, so much more gratifying. And from the beginning of episode 1, you understand that you're in for a treat. The whole opening is perfection. We see Matt's kind of origin, and then in the scene in the church, he has that excellent monologue where we get a shot that lingers for about a minute, where Matt tells us about the darkness within him and warns us what he's about to do. And then the next scene, we see him as Daredevil for the first time, saving all those women from the traffickers, and then seeing him so violently beat the main criminal. Like, he is just wailing on him. The hits get more and more intensive, and then we cut to the credits. And holy shit, the credits. Yeah. I mean, seeing these landmarks dripping with blood as the spectacular theme by John Pisano plays, it is so atmospheric. I hope so badly that Born Again uses that theme, because it's perfect. I don't know if you remember, but they use it in She-Hulk as well, and I ascended when I heard that. Remember when we did Secret Invasion a couple years ago? And we, you know, we talked about how boring, uninteresting, and disgustingly AI those opening titles were. Well, Daredevil, that's how it's done. The city is just crafted out of the blood and pain that surrounds Matt's life and emotions, and that beautiful score that pulses like a heartbeat and builds like the growing tension in Hell's Kitchen. It's one of those title sequences that I never skip, and it's so integral to the structure of each episode. It's just, oh my god, just wow. The atmosphere throughout the show is impeccable, and I think the score and that opening, oh, perfect.
The score really makes you realize about sound. It really intensifies all the way through, because we are understanding the world for Matt. He is blind, but he have other senses, so those other senses can be amplified, you know, it's emphasized all the way through. We get to hear it, but also it just makes it really intense all the way through. So it's an excellent score with the fight sequences and the quiet moments as well, that just makes it special but just really, really dark. By the way, this is a really, really violent show all the way through.
Oh my god, yeah.
Like, the intense fight sequences and then the horrible torture stuff as well. I mean, there was that one guy, he shows up frequently and he's like, I'll get out of jail, I'll come back. And he's got an ankle house arrest bracelet, and he gets kidnapped by the Hand, and his ankle bracelet goes off, and they were like, we're going to cut off your foot. And it was literally about to do it, and it was like, oh my god, this show doesn't have any restrictions, and it kills off characters in the most shocking way, like you wouldn't expect it. And it's like so heartbreaking, and it just shows you the stark reality of Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah, the Hand have numerous scenes. Like, there's one where somebody's tortured from their fingernails and they're like putting things under the, it's absolutely horrible to even think about. And then you have the hallway sequence, season 1 episode 2, one take, the original black suit, bodies flying, doors broken, the music building slowly, Matt working his way through half a dozen men with ease. Incredible. And then they do it again in season two. And this time it goes from a hallway down a stairwell and Matt's wearing the Daredevil suit and he has a chain. And there's about three times the amount of guys and it's still one shot. And then they do it again in season three, but this time it's an entire unbroken sequence through a prison where Matt is in a business suit the whole time, goes through dozens of guards. It's like 10 minutes long. It's the coolest thing ever. Wow, it's not overcomplicated. It's never a massive fight with a massive monster or using tons of gadget. It's just brutality and skill and excellent choreography. And I just, throughout, you're just like, wow. But the action of this show, it's more than just the fights. It's in the courtroom. It's in the drama. Particularly the battle against Fisk, it's fascinating because both in seasons one and three, you have people who are afraid to speak out, afraid to jeopardize their safety, their comfortability, to battle against evil, to stand against people in power who will step over anyone to keep that power. And that's a difficult thing to do. You see people in this show who want to keep themselves out of trouble, but that brings suffering. In both seasons one and season three, there are people, good, honest people, who are cut down. Innocent people who don't deserve their fate. You know, as you said, Fisk will burn the lives of hundreds just out of a claim that he loves the city because he claims to care about it, but that's only on his terms. And those terms include silencing those he doesn't agree with, to trample on their freedom, to uplift his own. Who does that remind you of? That doesn't just ring true to the modern day. It rings true to numerous instances throughout history, and that's the story of oppression. And without people like Matt, Foggy, Karen, Ben, Ray, forget Daredevil, forget the man in the mask. These people fight on the most dangerous battlefield in public. They had the courage to stand up and say no, to rally against somebody who seems undefeated. And I think the best stories reflect reality. They push us to be better. And that's what the show is all about, being better, being good, and how that will eventually prevail. The end of season three, the end of this show, is all about that. Goodness prevails. You know, the light seems dim, but it will shine through, even from people like Blake Tower or Detective Mahoney. And when Matt, Foggy, and Karen sit down at the end of season three, friends united, friends triumphant, and they have a drink together, God, it's goddamn beautiful. It's enough to make a grown man cry.
I love moments with that when characters have that big union celebration. You know, this is something that they've done together. It's so heartbreaking when Matt, Foggy, and Karen are trying to do something good for this world, but then evil just completely takes control of the city in such horrible ways. You do get to see that a lot in season one and season three as well, trying to figure out the kingpin, you know, who's trying to take control over the city. I find it really interesting how they've explored each of the other heads of the organization. It just gives you so much world building to understand their motivations and why they're working for Fisk, and it all comes crumbling down towards the end of season one. And it's just so satisfying when Fisk get taken down, but also in season three as well. Again, it's just the goodness prevails that it just makes it so wholesome, and they've done it the right way. Oh, I want to see them again now. I want to see them again, just like working together. But I'm hoping Daredevil Born Again will have some of those again. I'm just a bit worried they're not going to look into that.
I cannot believe that Born Again originally wasn't going to include Foggy and Karen at all. They had written a show without those two pillars of Matt's life. They had shot, I think, three episodes without those two. You can't tell a Daredevil story without it. Foggy, Matt, and Karen fighting the good fight and defending the innocent, helping people in and out of the courtroom. That makes this show, you really feel the dichotomy between the two halves of Matt's lives. And especially in season three, you really want him to fight for his friends, fight for the light in his life. You as an audience share their love, their joy. You laugh at their jokes. You smile at the time they spend together. This is one superhero story where the humanity, the real relationships between real people are why it works, why we love it, why we keep watching. And it may be the best it's ever done. I think it's a good time to get into spoilers. Seriously, watch this show. Do yourself that favor, because what a piece of storytelling. Like, it's phenomenal, and I think it's absolutely atop the best that live action Marvel has to offer. I want to talk about Kingpin. We don't even see him until episode three. We only hear how scared everyone is of him, how much control he has without even lifting a finger, so much that criminals even fear to whisper his name. But then the first time we do see him, the first thing he does is talk about a painting, the emotions it makes him feel. We are introduced to Kingpin through terror and vulnerability from himself. It almost mirrors how we're introduced to Matt And it's fantastic. I mean, Kingpin is one of the very best MCU villains before he's even had 10 minutes of screen time. But then when you properly meet him, every word he utters is oozing with passion, with conflict, also with pain. It's like he forces out every emotion he feels, and yet feels each one so deeply. He's vulnerable, but also powerful. And Vincent D'Onofrio is just a powerhouse of a performer. Thank God we get to see it more, because obviously this show was cancelled. I'm so glad that we are getting to see him. Obviously, he was in Hawkeye and Echo, and we will get to see him in Born Again, because every time he speaks, you just hold on to that man's every word.
Oh man, either he's really calm, but there's a ticking time bomb within his words. He's like, oh my god, it just feels so unpredictable. His when I was a boy, like, I knew some of the stuff, but it was gonna nonetheless, it's great to have such a terrifying antagonist. He can do whatever he wants, and he gets really angry. Like, he loves doors.
Yeah. He
wants to kill people with doors and just slam it into that. He will just kill his associates. If the plan doesn't go right, he will go absolutely berserk. So he is a ticking time bomb, and he just wants to get everything right. He's still afraid. He's using these fears as well, that he doesn't want anything to change. He killed his father when he was young with a hammer. Oh, that's... Oof. It's very psychological, talking about fears and how he's using those goals and the motivations because of his fears, and he doesn't want those, which is understandable, but then he kills more people in such horrible ways. You do get to see that in season 3 as well, which he becomes such a darker antagonist, I'd say. But season 1 is absolutely peak in terms of the duality between Matt and Fisk. But it's just great to see those other conflicts as well, how Matt is becoming Daredevil, how much it takes toll on him and his work. But then there's the other conflict of his religion as well, which is so interesting. He doesn't want to kill, so it's that conflict between what's he trying to do right, and the whole thing with the priest as well. Father Lantum, all the way through, he has so much great advice. The ancient texts can have some ideas of guidance, but for Matt, he's like, I don't know what's happening, you know. He doesn't know there's any guidance as well, so then he becomes the Daredevil, and that's such a great there's something about it that just makes so much sense. How come he can be Catholic, but then he's fine by night, then becomes a lawyer by day? And it's like this glasses as well, like the redness all the way throughout the show, that you get to see this red, the blood or the color of his suit. He has to be someone else, and it's obsessive. And you do get to see that in season 2 and season 3, how much he takes this Daredevil persona. You do get to see that symbolically with Bullseye wears the actual Daredevil suit. For me, that's symbolically trying to say that Matt has the inner demons fighting over himself. Like, he wants to be like this, but then there's that ruthless side to him that he wants to kill Kingpin. It's just the inner conflict that just makes it so great to explore more of this.
Yeah, Bullseye in the Daredevil suit being the dark extreme of what Matt sometimes gets close to becoming is amazing. And you have a similar thing with Punisher and Daredevil in season 2 as well. Yes. And their parallels. Even Rey Nadim and battling Jack Murdock as two people who want to help their families, who want their son to see them as something more than just an average person, who get ruthlessly gunned down. Heartbreaking on both accounts. And throughout, you have Daredevil's no kill rule, which is done perfectly. From the very opening of season 1, we see that Matt has this anger within him. He could easily be a killer, but he refuses to cross that line. He won't kill those who threaten to kill his loved ones. We see in season 2 that he won't kill the man who murdered his father. He won't let Frank Castle suffer the death penalty. He won't even kill Kingpin after everything he's done, everyone he's hurt. Season 3 finale, Matt gets so close, and he literally screams in anguish because you can feel the pull, the temptation to make the final blow. Kingpin even tries to egg him on, but he still won't, because he's a hero, he's good, he says it himself, he values human life, and he struggles with that all throughout the show. As I said earlier, the season 2 episode where he and Punisher debate whether killing criminals is morally just is amazing. It's perfect. I keep saying that word, but the whole thing, so much of this show is perfect.
Yeah.
Everything with the Punisher, this pain of a man who has fought a war and committed atrocities, and somebody who has this code, but in such a different way than Matt does, you know, somebody who won't hesitate to kill. I'm sure one day we'll talk about the Punisher series, but that is also a fantastic series, and him as a character. I just love that episode in season 2 is just them being like, I can kill people. Oh, you shouldn't kill people. No, maybe you should kill people. I'm not gonna, what if you kill him? I'm gonna kill him. Oh no, I don't know, I'm gonna kill him. Don't kill him, Frank. I'm gonna kill him. You gotta kill me then. Like, it's just like this, you people just getting angrier and angrier at each other about this idea. And they also come to a moral understanding when Matt can finally see what Frank has been through and see that perspective. And in season three, he almost even goes to that extreme. Death is surrounding this show. Like, does it define us? You know, Karen, she kills two people, one of which not intentionally, but the other one absolutely. And she says, you never don't carry that. And Bullseye was murdering since he was a child. He's a psychopath and enjoys it, never feels more himself when doing it. But he will never be able to have any meaningful relationship, not only because he doesn't understand it, but because people will never feel safe with the kind of person he is. Like, what does killing do to somebody? I love that. That is just such a core theme of this entire thing.
Yeah. Oh my God. And with Bullseye, he's very good at throwing things, I have to say. He's very good. Yes. You throw a chair and it just gets Bullseye. So death surrounds everything for the show in heartbreaking ways. The most heartbreaking is Cardenas and Ben.
Yeah.
Oh, Ben. That paved the way for Karen to understand her arc. She has a voice and how much she wants to take Fisk down with words that she doesn't want to repeat. There's mistakes with death that she accidentally killed her brother and Wesley as well. So it just took so much fear over her. It's just those fears as well that comes up. So it's like death and fear that just has this effect on people. So it's Matt that comes out at the top that really understands about death and how much he can affect on everybody.
And I love as well in season three, because the characters are apart, which is heartbreaking, and it sucks to see Matt not embracing Matt Murdock. It's so cool because you get to explore Karen and Foggy a lot. There's an episode in season three just called Karen, because that's where we truly get to focus in on who she is. She's also in The Punisher as well. She has a really interesting relationship with Frank Castle because she can understand that drive to kill. She has a darkness, and even she says at one point, shouldn't Matt just kill Kingpin? And you do understand that. But okay, I have to be honest, it's not all perfect. There is one plot thread that I don't massively love.
Yes.
It's the stuff of Stick, right? Okay, so Stick in season one.
Thank you. I was about to go with that. With the whole thing. And the bit with Elektra, it's 50-50 for me.
Right, okay. So in season one, we get the Stick episode, which is maybe the only episode of the entire show that I don't like. There are others that there are things that I don't like, but that might be the only one that I'm just not a massive fan of. We begin to open it up to this massive war, and that leads to the Defenders. The Defenders is a good show. I really like it. I like The Hand. I like Matt and Karen and Foggy in that show. Arguably, you can't watch Daredevil without watching Defenders. I don't know if you were confused, John, but in between season two and three, so much goes down. Yeah, Matt and Elektra, a building fall on them, the whole thing, you know. But then we have Elektra as part of that, and her side of the story, I think it's supposed to feel wrong. It's supposed to make you feel bad about what Matt is doing, both in the present and in the flashbacks. And I don't enjoy seeing him going down that path of being consumed by the devil, but that's the point. And I enjoy how his arc leads him away from his friends and into the eventual reunion and victory against his demons in season three. But I think what I struggle with is the transition from Matt balancing the lawyer vigilante life to him being consumed with it. It's why with the Stick episode in season one, it's my least favorite of that season, because everything kind of screeches to a halt in a way that I find much less engaging. I think it takes me a moment to get into the stuff with The Hand and Elektra in season two. So that stuff, I think it is the least interesting, but it's small things. I mean, rarely this show doesn't keep me totally engaged and consumed by its story and its characters, just every now and again. And it is more Stick than anything else. I just think that's an element that they never quite got right.
Yeah, that struggled with me. Also, what was the whole thing with Stick talking to someone at the end of the show? Who was that?
Oh, they never do anything with that in Defenders or anything. I think there is somebody that it's supposed to be. I cannot remember off the top of my head, but that was a setup for something that just never came to fruition. Maybe now they'll do it with Born Again, but they never did anything with that. I just feel like they didn't really know what they were doing with that side of the plot. Stick does die in Defenders, and so, you know, it's over. Yeah.
Oh,
surprise.
Okay. When I started season three, I was like, what just happened? Okay, I guess, because I didn't want that to be a criticism how I felt with the opening, but then I was like, no, I'm engaged. It's funny, there's the whole connection with the shows. I remember your list, the chronological list of watching the shows Damn, so that's how it happened. Is it satisfying to watch those in
order? 100%. At least the first batch of shows that lead up to Defenders. After that, they don't really, like, they do a little bit of crossing over, but Defenders is a really fun show because you get to see all those characters interact and you see all of their different personalities clash. I always wanted to see more from the Defenders, to be honest, and I'm happy that they're in the MCU because I hope that this is our chance to see more.
Yeah.
But this particularly could be my favorite live action comic book adaptation ever. I can't think of anything that comes so close, that keeps me hooked constantly, that builds such relatable and compelling characters, and nothing Marvel or DC has ever reached this quality. I think it's perfect. And of course, I'm excited for Born Again, but let's not pretend like there's any chance in hell that it will even come close to this magnificence. I mean, like, are you excited for Born Again?
I'm excited to see what Born Again will do differently, because what the show does amazingly is it goes into different directions. It just keeps you on your toes. It just makes you think. I'm excited if they can do something interesting, because Daredevil is such a unique character. I'm excited, but I'm just a bit nervous about what they're going to do for Born Again. What about you, Tom?
I agree. I think a lot of people are like, oh yeah, it's going to be more comic booky and he's going to do big flips and he's going to swing.
Big flips? No Yo! Way! Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, okay. I mean, he's got a new suit, and I think that in this show, the black suit is iconic. I have no
it's
notes.
Perfect.
I did it
perfect.
As a Halloween costume a couple years ago, but they never quite got the main suit right. And
I agree.
Obviously, we're going to see another one. Maybe we'll finally get the double D's, but there's a lot in terms of comic book accuracy that is exciting, but I don't care. That's
yeah.
never been what made this show great. And there is a lot that I'm excited for, to see Matt and Fisk go to war again, seeing Punisher and Daredevil reunite after the kind of tantalizing see you around red at the end of season two. That was
see
really exciting.
But
what I'm most excited for always is Nelson, Murdoch, and Paige, and those three are the beating heart of this original show. And as we all know, potential spoilers for Born Again hasn't released yet, but there is potential that one of, or God forbid, both of Matt's best mates will die. And a lot of people think it's gonna be Foggy. I'd be lying if I said
I don't want Foggy, man.
I'm scared, man, because so much of this original show is about why Matt needs his friends, why he needs Foggy. Avocados at law, man, like they're best friends. They're always there for each other when it comes to it, and Foggy's such a brilliant character. And if Foggy dies, what would that do to Matt? I mean, hey, that would be fascinating to explore, but what would that do
True.
To the show? To take away the grounding force that gives Matt his emotions, his humanity, or worse, to replace that? That would be an insanely tricky thing to get right. And we are only a few days away from the Born Again premiere, so good luck, Marvel.
Good luck, yeah.
In the words of RuPaul Charles, do not fuck it up. I think a lot of people really, really are excited for the show, and I refuse to get too excited because they have burned me before. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a weird transition that we're going into.
Yeah, I just think I'm worried. And we will come back when Born Again is finished. We will cover it, of course. But in terms of this show, to wrap us out, what's your favorite season?
Season one.
Okay, yeah. Season one was always my favorite, but this time around, I think season three for me. I know
the
basic
season three
answer.
Is second best. Season three is second best for me. Because I think season one just, it's impeccable. Second season is my least favorite.
Yeah.
But I do love the Punisher things. It was amazing. But it was the Elektra and Stick storyline that just made me feel like, what is it exactly going on? So, yeah. What about you?
I agree with season two. It's definitely the one we've talked about the least today. But at the same time, it's not a bad season at all. It's not that much below the other two for me. It's still a very good season of TV, and I enjoy it a lot, especially the Punisher stuff, as you're saying. But yeah, season three for me is this time around, and who knows, that could change again. But the magnum opus. What are you going to give Daredevil out of 10?
A 9. I really want to get it to close to 10, but I'm like...
There's no denying this show is a masterpiece. It may not be perfect. I would agree with you, 9 out of 10. It's just a flipping awesome, brilliant, spectacular piece of work.
There's probably a lot more that we haven't discussed about Daredevil,
oh
but
my God.
Please do.
We could do a video on all seasons individually. Maybe one day we will. We definitely talked about season two the least, but there's so much to talk about. We're talking about essentially a day and a half of Daredevil when you put it all together. Yeah. That's a lot of stuff.
That's a lot of stuff. Please do watch it. If you just listen to this whole way through, I think we barely scratched the surface of what we try to say as well. We love this show.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you're listening on YouTube and you liked it, you can like and subscribe if you want to see more. And if you're listening on Apple or Spotify, you can follow and give us a 5-star review if you think we're worthy. And next week, it's not another comic book movie thing. We're taking a break from that for a little bit because we're doing Mickey 17.
Oh, thankfully, I don't have to watch 3 seasons in one sitting in 1 week. So that'll be a nice change of pace.
And you can send us an email, ourstimefilmpod@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts on Mickey 17 and we'll answer right here on the podcast next week.
Yes, and you can follow us on Instagram at Out of Time Film Pod to see our incredible thumbnails for St. Asphalt on Blue Sky for more thoughts from Tom and me, and TikTok to see edited clips, which are all also on Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts. And you can find links to that all in the description below. Thanks to L. Jane Smith for the excellent theme and Roland Phillips for vocals as always. And I think that's everything. Take away, given.
Give nothing back.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.